Read me romance. Read, read me romance. Read me romance. Read, read me romance.
You could take a look in a book, that's fine. Or you could sit back, relax, and unwind and
read me romance. Read, read me romance.
Welcome back. It's hump day.
You're here with Alexa Riley on the hump day. Aren't you welcome?
I was just singing the song in my head and I was thinking about, has Elby thought about redoing it?
I don't know. She said that if we got to 10,000 followers, she would write us another song. So I don't know if she, I don't, like, 10,000 on Instagram. So I don't know if she meant, like, she would write a new jingle for this one or she would just do a whole new song to begin with. We should, like, I don't want to say pay her, but we should do something to say thank you because we didn't pay her. We just asked her to do it.
We're like, give me this.
Give us a song.
All right. Welcome back. You guys are here for American Squire.
And today is the third installment, but we're going to pause that for a little bit and do some silly fun questions before that.
Yep.
Ready? Let's rock and roll. Let's see. Madison says, do you remember your answer when your teachers asked you, what do you want to be when you grow up? What was your answer, and is it what you are today?
No, I wanted to be a cop.
You wanted to be a cop?
Yeah.
Wow, you're such a little badass.
I was obsessed with criminal justice. That's what I went to college for. I loved cop. I don't know. I always thought I wanted to be a cop.
I could see you doing it, though. I don't know if I could see you, like, wearing the uniform and out on patrol. I don't know if I could see that, but I feel like I could see you, like, being a detective, like, looking into cases and stuff and being like, there's no way she did this or whatever. I object. Actually, that'd be a judge. So hand to God. I wanted to be a nun when I was younger. I did. I really did. Because I think I saw The Sound of Music and it looked like a nice life. And I was like, oh, she gets to sing and hang out with kids. This is great.
I don't know.
I think you never seen it. It's really cute. It comes on a lot at Christmas, although it's not a Christmas movie. Like, they play the song a lot at Christmas. The My Favorite Things. I don't know why. But
actually, I think, now that you said I want to be a nun, I think Sinner, of this author's audiobook, she's a nun.
Oh, that's right. She is. Yes. Yeah. You're right.
Well, there you go. And you can get that on the Chirp app for $1.99 right now, the audio.
Fuck yeah. Get on that Chirp. Yeah. I was about to go, woo woo, but that's not a Chirp. All right. Next question. Is a hot dog a sandwich? No.
Ooh.
I'm going to say no. It's a fucking hot dog. It's like, that's a thing on its own.
I don't know.
I look at it like, does it have the ability to have lettuce and tomato on it? Because I feel like that's a sandwich.
Yes. Yeah. Well, if you see hot dogs now, they've got like everything on them.
I don't know. I don't like this question.
Even Sonic this makes me has angry. Like five different images.
This makes me angry. Because I don't like this, Dana. That's who asked this question. Dana, you're making me question everything I know, and I don't like it.
Me and my husband got in a bunch of arguments like 2 days ago. We were at the airport about what is considered vegetables and fruits and stuff like that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I got worked up about it. I'm like, whoa, if I had to pick one.
I can see that. So what do you think? Are you a yes or a no? Is a hot dog a sandwich?
The American in me wants to say no.
I feel like you can't put that in a box.
I feel like the American in me, because I just feel like it's a hot dog is an all-American thing and it's a thing of its own.
Yeah.
But like in general, if I was just like, yeah, I can see that's a sandwich.
All right. So Ryan asked, she's actually one of our littles. Hey, if the police arrested you without explanation, what would your family and friends assume you had done? Assault. I'd beat a bitch's ass. I don't know. I mean, that would be my first, like, if I'm getting arrested, like, I'm getting arrested. Like, if I'm going to catch a charge, I want it to be worth it.
Mine would probably be theft.
No, would you really?
Yeah, because I've accidentally, like, you know, like, put things, like, you're holding a bunch of stuff and go to slide it in my purse so I could carry more.
Yeah, yeah.
And then I'm like, oh, shit, I just put that in my purse.
Oh, so yours is an accident. I was thinking if I actually got arrested.
Oh, mine would be, like, doing something. If I was actually out doing something bad.
Like, illegal.
Maybe, like, stalking or something.
Because of all the trackers on the phones we have.
I just feel like, so my girlfriend would be like, I think he's blah, blah, blah. And I'd be like, trespassing.
Oh, yeah, climbing fences. Oh, yeah. Yeah, I can see that. Mine would probably be parking illegal. Like, if it was something, like, passive or whatever, I'd be like, what do you mean I can't park there? That mom would probably something stupid like that. Thanks, man. Darlene said, if you had to eat your partner's favorite dessert in front of them but not share after every meal for a year, what would their reaction be?
I don't care.
No. Mine would probably, like, I feel like my husband would just be like, really? Like, every time. Like, he just get, like, are you kidding me? Like,
he would just shake his head at me. That's what I would.
Yeah, you think he'd, like, go get his own and just be like, this is stupid.
Just like, whatever, what did he say? I was eating my ice cream cake for Mother's Day. I got that ice cream cake, yeah. And I cut out this giant piece. And me and Peyton were the only ones that ate it, but he, like, comes to my office, and I'm eating at my desk, and I, like, just put a spoonful in my mouth, and I'm like, and he looks at me, and I know he's about to say something. I was like, I'm really fucking busy right now.
As you're stirring your cake.
And he's like, whatever. It turns out
it was. Oh my God, I love it. I think it's pronounced Theresa, if I'm saying that correctly. It might be, some people would pronounce it Teresa, but I have a good friend of mine. Her mom is Theresa. It's Theresa.
That's how they say it all.
Oh, well, then maybe she's a housewife. How many tacos are too many tacos?
I get sick.
How many do you get on Puffy Taco Day? Today's Tuesday. Today's Puffy Taco Day.
Yes, my Puffy Taco.
In real life.
12:30. Yeah, it's being picked up at 12:35.
How many did you get?
I only get one Puffy Taco because it's big and thick. It's almost like a chalupa.
Yeah.
But if I was just ordering a la carte tacos, I'd order.
I don't know what that's like to just order three tacos.
But I eat a lot of chips and salsa. Like, when my husband goes to pick mine up, he's going to be like, no, she needs more. I need, like, two or three bits.
Yeah, of chips and salsa. See, I would forego all the chips and salsa and order, like, six tacos. I would do that, and I'd be happy. Like, when it's Taco Tuesday, they have, like, dollar tacos at the Mexican restaurant here on Tuesday nights.
But I feel like Taco Tuesday doesn't count. I swear those tacos are small.
Yeah, they're tiny. I order five, at least five, and I'm, like, I'm comfortably full when I'm done.
When I mean a taco, I mean, like, a normal taco, like, Taco Bell size. Okay. Three.
Well, those are still kind of small, though, right? I'm just hungry. All right, so Heather says, what's the weirdest name you ever heard a body part being called? My mom used to call dicks a doodangus. Doodangus? What? Sending Christina replied, I run a daycare. I call them winky dinks or whackerdackers. This is the best. I had one parent get upset. I tell them I'm not going to make everyone happy, so this is what I can do. You do what you do at home. Whackerdackers. I like that. What do you call them? We don't. There's only one penis in my house.
I call it a penis and a vagina.
Yeah, like we don't refer to it, I guess, because it's just my husband's. Like, we don't have to talk about it. But I just call it, like, I say their crotch, like, or I say, like, their pee-pee, like, I say that, like, because if it's a girl, I mean, they don't understand, like, can I see your vulva, you know, I need to, you know, like, that kind of thing. Like, it's hard to explain, like, if I need to, like, check them over or whatever, or clean themselves, like, I feel like the vagina's internal.
I don't know, I just always called it the vagina. Even when we write sometimes, I feel weird because I want to say vagina, and I'm like, every year, so I think it's really weird that I call it vagina.
Yeah.
Straight out.
Yeah.
But that's what I call it if I'm like, I don't know, your vagina.
I've heard, like, the fire hose. I've heard that at daycare before.
And with Peyton, with my son, I just call him penis because the kid likes to run around naked. I'm like, nobody wants to see your penis.
Yeah.
Put some pants
I feel
on.
Like that's easier because that encompasses, like, everything. But girls have so many different parts. I'm like, I'm still trying to educate my girls on what that is, you know? So it's like, I feel like I'm going to confuse them if I call it a vagina, and that's not what everything is. I don't know. I think, there is a word for the outer part of your vagina, but I don't know, like your pussy, there's a word for that. I think, is it vulva? Is that it? I don't know. I have one, and I don't know. The next one is by Stephanie. If you could join any TV show family, what family would you join?
Like, real life or reality?
Either one.
Oh.
Choose your own adventure. Would you join a Real Housewives franchise? I'm trying to think. Like, I mean, I Game of Thrones would be fun, but then I think about how hard that would be.
That sounds hard.
And I'd probably die, so. Because obviously I'm the main character. Gosh, I don't know. That's a tough question. Like, I'm trying to think about shows that I love. The Office. I loved The Office. That was so good. It was just so pure and sweet. And it would be fun. Did you watch Friends? Did you ever watch that?
Yeah, I watched Friends.
I wasn't super into it, but I've seen probably all of them. I'm trying to think.
I'm just trying to think of something that's all happy.
I know, that's what I was thinking too. Like a show, because I was like, well, I like The Walking Dead, but I wouldn't want to join that.
I like a lot of shows, but I don't want
to
be in
that. I know. Oh, Parks and Rec was really good. That would be a good one to join, because that was really fun and sweet.
Oh, Will and Grace.
Oh, that's, yeah, that's a good one too. Yeah. Okay, so let's see. Kayla says, what is the most cringeworthy way you've ever heard or read a love scene being described? Like, I don't know. Like, I can't think of a particular scene that's been cringy. But I can tell you, like, when I read something and it's, like, a very clinical description where it's, like, I don't know. Like, if somebody said penis in a scene, I would probably be so jerked out of it. But then I've read scenes before where they're so over-elaborate that it's really off-putting, where it's, like, he put his, like, throbbing heat sword inside her. Like, you know, where it's just ridiculous, stupid names for it. That just take me totally out of the scene. I've hated that before. I can't think of, like, a scene in particular that's, like, super cringy, though. I'll know it when I read it. How about that? There's several sex questions on this that I don't want to do. So, we'll keep it silly and fun instead of oversharing. Because, trust me, you don't want to know the history of our sex lives.
All right, how about we let you go into this one?
Yeah.
Go back into this book and get some
stuff. We'll answer the rest of them tomorrow.
All right. We'll see you guys on the flip side.
Bye.
Bye.
3 hours later, and my lack of success has only made me more determined. I've gotten through a good tenth of the shelves, but it's slow, tedious work. Slower than I could have ever imagined. First of all, there's no real order to the library. No sections or classifications or any kind of organizational scheme at all. There's no records, no catalogs, no metadata I can use to make my search any easier. And secondly, there's not enough light to see what the hell I'm doing. The snow has grown worse, thicker, and faster. And even with a lamp dragged along behind me, the gloom is so thick that I have to use my phone flashlight to see. And complicating it all is the aged state of the books themselves, some of them without titles on their spines, some with titles but with the lettering peeling off and rendering the title unrecognizable. I have to pull most books off the shelf and check the front page to see what they are, and it's so fucking time-consuming. I finish another row and pause to stretch, reevaluating all the project flowcharts I'd made in my mind yesterday. People often think that being methodical and being efficient are synonymous, but that's not the case. Sometimes efficiency requires creativity rather than logic. It requires vision. I pride myself on seeing the shortcuts other people miss. So I take a minute to examine the library once again, now that I'm more familiar with it. I take in the huge fireplace to one side, the dusty reaches of the upper story, the ladders and stairs giving access to high shelves and balconies in a baroque tangle of dark wood. And of course, my gaze is pulled to the elegant arch of Sidney's neck over his mysterious papers, to the contrast of his strong, cut jaw against his black turtleneck. From this angle, the cashmere-covered planes of his shoulders and biceps are framed by the rows of richly colored books just behind him, and... ah. Interesting. On that same bookshelf in front of Sydney, I spy two large items that look more like ledgers than books. When I head over to investigate, I realize I'm going to have to climb the little ladder to reach them. And with a sigh, I do, very aware that my genes are not made for climbing things. With each rung, I can feel the denim pulling indecently tight around my ass and thighs. I just pray Sydney of the impeccable tailoring isn't looking at me right now.
"Do you need help?"
he asks from behind me. He's gotten up and moved with such silent, cat-like grace that I had no idea he was there. I'm fine," I say, reaching for the books and trying to get myself down to where he can't see all the anatomical detail my genes are currently revealing. But before I can take a single step down, Sydney's on the ladder behind me, reaching for the books in my hand.
"Don't move,"
he orders. And I don't move. There's the light tap of his derby shoes reverberating through the wood, the gone too soon press of him against my back, and then he has both books in his hand and is climbing back down. The ghost of all that lean warmth keeps me frozen for a long second, long enough for him to say from the floor, with a touch of wry amusement,
"Do you need help down?"
"No," I say quickly, not wanting him to see how much he affects me. "No, I'm completely fine."
"Hmm,"
he says, setting the ledgers on the table and going back to his work. And his "hmm" sounds like he's not entirely fooled by my act. But just a moment later, when I'm moving the ladder back to where I found it, he lets out a ragged breath, and when I turn, he has his eyes closed and his hand in a fist on the table, like it's taking all of his control to remain right where he is.
"So these were Esterman's records?"
Auden asks, and I set the books on the sofa next to him. It's after dinner, and the four of us have repaired to the library with whiskey to enjoy the big fireplace and the snow still fluttering past the windows in the dark. As far as I can tell, it doesn't look like she got anything close to having the whole library surveyed, but some of it is here. Auden flips through the brittle pages, eyes running over lines and lines of browned, century-old ink. "Fascinating." Sydney, who's standing at the arm of the sofa and looking down over Auden's shoulder, moves away to the window. The firelight in the shadowy room dances everywhere, dances over the subtle lines of muscle and spine on his cashmere-covered back.
"I still think you should consider hiring someone to take care of this,"
he says as he goes. Auden doesn't look up from the amateur library catalog.
"I don't even know what that means," he says. "I'm not sure if I care."
"You could at least finish Esterman's work and properly catalog the library,"
Kremer says from the far sofa across the coffee table.
"You could even arrange for the digitization of books that haven't been digitized in other libraries yet. Think about it, Auden. If that Tristram and Isolde is the only copy left in the world and it's here, how many other rare things are held hostage in Thornchapel's walls?"
It's the boldest I've ever heard Kremer speak, and I suspect it has something to do with how little scotch is left in his glass. Auden must notice too, because he looks up at his lawyer with one of those boy king smiles he has.
"Kremer, you are saucy tonight. And about books of all things."
My phone buzzes in my pocket, and when I pull it out, I see a message from a number I don't recognize. Unknown number.
"This is Nimue. Tell Mr. Kremer to hire a woman named Prosperina Markham to work on Thornchapel's library."
I stare at the phone for a long time, not really sure what I'm seeing. But 4 years working with Merlin has left me resigned to these sorts of things. When magic crops up, it's always more work to ignore it than to let it blow through your life. With a sigh, I turn to Kremer.
"You should hire someone named
Prosperina Markham, I say very quickly, hoping it sounds less bonkers if I blurt it out. The ledger Auden holds falls shut with a loud, papery clap. I glance over at him in surprise, even more surprised to see a muscle ticking wildly in his jaw. "What did you just say?" he whispers. His long eyelashes sweep over those hazel eyes like dark fans as he looks at me with something like shock. "What name did you just say?" "Prosperina Markham," I repeat. It's a mouthful, I know. Auden is staring at me hard enough to etch my skin with his questions. My phone buzzes again. Nimue. She's a rare book archival specialist in the U.S. She's an archival specialist, I parrot. Auden shoves the ledgers off his lap to stand. "Holy fuck," he mutters to himself. He spears long fingers through his light brown hair and jerky, agitated movements. "Holy fuck." I take a look at my pacing host, and then at the tipsy lawyer in front of me, who already looks eager to pounce on whatever this means to Auden if it will result in Auden hiring a librarian, and I quietly excuse myself from the seating area. I probably should get myself another drink or pretend to sift through the ledgers some more. Polite, meaningless activity while I give Auden and Kremer privacy. But I can't help it. I'm drawn to the giant windows. I'm drawn to the tall, wide-shouldered man silhouetted against the glass. Sydney stands with one hand in a pocket and the other with his scotch glass dangling between his fingertips. He's gazing out at the snow-beleaguered scene outside, but he nods when I come to stand next to him, as if he's been aware of my movements the whole time. "Ryan?" He takes a drink. "Mr. Blunt?" We share a quiet moment together, just watching the snow come down and the laden trees creak in the wind. Then he says, abruptly,
"Your president. Did you love him?"
There's no sense in lying. "Yes." His fingers tighten around the glass.
"Were you lovers?"
"No. Why are you asking?"
"Because, Ryan Belvedere, I want to know what I'm up against."
Shock and hope thud through my bloodstream. I have to swallow before I speak. "What you're up against?" Sydney takes a step forward, close enough that I can see the reflection of the firelight glinting in his eyes.
"Yes," he says quietly. "Am I competing with the hero you gave your body to, or only your heart? Have I lost the chance to try for you before I've even met you?"
I don't think I can breathe. "Mr. Blunt."
Another step forward. "You didn't shave today," he murmurs. "It makes me want to touch your jaw. Is that a problem?"
And I finally get it. Finally get that when he asks, "Is this a problem?" he's actually asking if it's okay. He's asking if he can. He's asking for consent. That realization sends a hot frisson of need right to my dick. "It's not a problem," I say hoarsely. And he touches my jaw. His fingers are warm and probing over my stubbled skin, and his stare is so intense that I can barely endure it. He traces along the bone from my ear to my chin, and then he takes my chin between his fingers, searching my face.
"So you weren't lovers?"
"I never slept with the president, no." Sydney hears the subtext in my carefully chosen words, and his mouth flattens.
"What does that mean?"
"He sent me to his former vice president as a gift? Only once."
"Hmm. Did you love the vice president, too?
For the first time, I'm able to say it out loud. Yes, I loved him. And I loved Ash. I loved his wife, too. I loved them all. I wanted to be with them all.
And now, do you pine for Embry Moore and Greer Colchester even as you grieve for your president?
I take a deep breath, staring into Sidney's firelight eyes, feeling his warm fingers gripping me. It feels safe. It feels beautiful. Beautiful enough to let go of something I've held on to for far too long. No, I say. I don't pine for them. And Ash, I grieve and I mourn, but maybe I can... I trail off. I don't know what words I want. I don't know what words I mean. How can I explain that I'll always mourn Ash, but that right here, tonight, with the snow swirling and the firelight flickering in this cathedral of books, tonight, with Sidney's cruel mouth and Conqueror's eyes, I'm ready to set the mourning aside, that I'm willing to consider something new, someone new. Sidney's fingers tighten once, and then he releases my chin, so he can take my hand. It's a simple touch, the warmth of fingers interlacing and palms pressing in a cold room. And yet because it's him, because it's this sharp-edged ice god touching me, I feel his touch everywhere, skating over the furrow of my spine and teasing at the creases of my knees and thighs, brushing over my nipples and ghosting over secret places no one's touched in months and months. My cock, which was gradually stirring in his presence, is now so hard that I know he'll be able to tell if he looks down, even in the dim room.
I want to be the one, Ryan, he says in that crisp, elegant voice of his. The one you begin to try with, and the one you open up to. I want you to be mine, like you were his.
My heart is hammering so hard that I feel like everyone in the room must be able to hear it, even as my brain tumbles over and over trying to parse his words. You want me to be yours, like I was his, I repeat slowly. What does that even mean? He wants me to be his aid? He's offering me a job? Or he wants me to love him and serve him, but not share my body? Sidney bends his head slightly so that our eyes meet again.
Do you understand what I'm asking?
No, Mr. Blunt. If he wants to hire me, then why hold my hand? If he wants me to serve him like I served Ash, then why are his eyes dropping to my mouth even now, as if he's already making plans for it? He blows out a breath.
I've phrased this badly. I shouldn't have brought his memory into it. But I couldn't help it. I'm jealous of him.
His mouth twists at the corner with irony.
I'm jealous of a dead man. I'm jealous of how faithful you are to his memory when you didn't even fuck, and I'm jealous that he had the use of your body at all, even if it was only to give it to someone else. I want that right. I want that faithfulness.
Our hands are still held tight, and he puts his glass to his mouth with his other hand, taking a sip of scotch. I'm about to do the same with mine, just to do anything, perform any gesture that makes this surreal moment real. But he shakes his head and lifts his drink to my lips instead. The glass is cool, the whiskey rich, and when I part my lips to accept it, his eyes darken with pleasure. It's so erotic to be fed like this, given something from a powerful man's glass and at his hand. And it's so sexy that I don't even care that we're not shrouded from view, that Auden and Kremer could look over here at any time and see us holding hands, see us sharing this moment. Sydney doesn't seem to care either, because when I finish drinking, he lowers the glass to the stone windowsill and then uses a thumb to wipe the wet trace of whiskey from my lips. And then he puts his thumb to his own mouth and licks it off. I nearly slump against the window.
"I don't want you to be my aide," he says, giving his thumb a final dart with his tongue. "I don't need a servant, and I don't want you to be either of those things for me. At least, not in the way you have been in the past. When you serve me, when you act as my squire, it will be a choice and a game we play. I want to be your master and your only king. I want you to belong in my keeping. I want to fuck you and to care for you and to learn about you and share your time and your body and maybe your heart after enough time has passed. Is that a problem?" Which means, can I? He can, if he's asking what I think he's asking. "It's only been 2 days," I say as I consider what I really want to say, what I really want to ask.
"I don't need longer," he says with an arrogant lift of his head. "I want you."
"And do you have anybody else in your keeping?"
"Do you think I'd be spending my Christmas sorting through art provenance papers if I did?"
"Why isn't there anyone else then?" He lets out a long breath.
"Because I'm cruel and I'm cold. And sometimes I like to make the people I love cry. Any other questions?"
"Yes," I say. "We haven't put a name to this. We haven't said the words, but I've only ever done this before in a formal setting."
"In a club, you mean?"
"Right. I've never done this in real life. I've never had a dominant who was mine for more than a session. I've never had a man who wanted my heart and my pain." Sydney's eyes look impossibly tender.
"Never?"
"You are so young." "And you're not," I say.
"You've done this before? You know how it works?" "You mean, have I had men that I took to the movies and out to dinner, and that I also flogged and humiliated?"
"Yes." Now I think I'm a little jealous. How ridiculous that we should be jealous of each other's pasts when we've known each other for less than 48 hours, and yet I can't lie to myself. The jealousy is invigorating. It's potent and intoxicating. It feels like being alive, wanting what I can't have, wanting total and complete occupation in the heart of a near stranger.
"You'll find that it's not so different," Sydney says. "The club and real life. You'll tell me your limits, and you'll tell me what gets you hard. You'll tell me what you desire most and what you'll do to earn it. Tell me how far I can go and tell me what you expect in return, and then we'll begin."
"And when I find the book and have to leave?" His hand tightens on mine, as if he's already trying to keep me from leaving.
"You don't have to go, you know. Not if you don't want to."
"Mr. Blunt."
"What has you so eager to return?" he asks. "If there's not a job or a lover waiting, then why not tarry with me?"
I don't have a good answer to that. The truth is that after 4 years of doing nothing but attending to someone else's needs, I have plenty of savings and no real urgency to find another situation. The lease on my tiny DC studio is up next month,
and I still haven't decided what to do about it. My life is as shapeless as candle smoke right now. The interesting thing is that Sydney's offer makes my candle smoke life seem like a good thing, an exciting thing, as opposed to the burden it felt just a day ago. I feel free instead of lost. I'd need a place to stay.
You could stay with me, he says,
and I know the caution in his voice is because he doesn't want to spook me.
I have plenty of space, plenty of room.
You'd want me to stay with you? He tilts his head.
Does that bother you?
I don't know. The words are uncomfortable in my mouth. I'm just like everyone else. I grapple with uncertainty, nuance, ambiguity. The only difference is that for the last 4 years, I wasn't allowed to say, I don't know. I was always expected to have the answer, or to find the answer as fast as possible. It feels oddly good to say it again, the initial discomfort disappearing into the soothing power of the words. I don't know.
You don't have to know, Sydney assures me. As long as you tell me when you do.
And until then?
Until then, I want to guide us. I want to lead us. Is that a problem?
No, I whisper. It's not a problem.
Welcome back!
Hey, how about that chapter?
You guys are more than halfway through. You only have 2 more days left to get all of it and get your happily ever after.
And we're going to be here tomorrow. Yeah. We'll be back tomorrow. We'll probably talk about our book that's coming out, Too Many, on Friday. If it's not already live, look out for it soon. That's it. Just remember to rate, review, and subscribe to the podcast. Subscribing really helps us out. We appreciate it. Follow us on social media for giveaways and fun stuff. And join our Facebook group, Read Me Romance Headquarters. That's it.
Bye, guys.
Bye.
Read me romance. Read me romance. Read me romance. Read me romance. You could take a look in a book, that's fine. Or you could sit back, relax.